I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Major staffing concerns and the healthcare system, a strain on Toronto ambulances. Good evening. We begin tonight with more examples of that strain on the province's healthcare system.
City officials say they're committed to maintaining emergency services, but it follows a warning about ambulance shortages over the weekend. CTV's Sean Lethong is live at an ambulance station in Etobicoke. Sean.
Well, Nathan and Zarada, ambulance members of the union have been saying that this area has had no surge capacity. So when this surge came, the strain came with it.
As confidence is being shaken in the city's emergency services, today Mayor Tory was assuring Toronto that calls for an ambulance will be answered.
Our objective under the leadership, which I can tell you has been sound and has been steady, of Chief Raftus, has been to make sure we have a plan in place which ensures for Torontonians that we have their back at all times.
This after a member of the paramedics union said that there was no ambulances available to respond to a call where life was in danger this past Saturday.
It's a symptom of a chronically understaffed and underfunded service. We had a lot of trouble handling calls before COVID. And certainly now that's been exacerbated exponentially by COVID with increased calls.
Officials have said that with the surge of Omicron cases, Toronto Fire is handling non-urgent medical calls. But one Toronto firefighter who does not want to be identified says a call which he handled in late December is an example for how desperate the situation has become.
There was a substantial loss of blood. We did our best to slow it down. We could not stop it.
He called for an ambulance, but no ambulance was available.
And so the last idea I had was to call a taxi. And in 32 years in this job, I've never ever done that. So that's how serious things have been on certain times.
This is an exceptional time. It is not normal times.
Toronto Paramedic Chief Paul Raftus says that availability can shift, saying that despite shortages today, there are 114 ambulances available, just shy of a regular day. And
in-hospital wait times are the most significant factor contributing to the system pressures, and it's not uncommon for our paramedics to wait in hospitals for hours.
We are getting to the point where the whole system is overwhelmed.
Dr. Aaron O'Connor, Deputy Director of Emergency Medicine at the University Health Network, says hospitals are running out of beds and running out of staff to admit new patients.
And if there's no one available to do that, we don't have a bed to put them in, we can't move them off the stretcher, and we can't move them into the waiting room safely, then unfortunately they're stuck staying on the EMS stretchers with our paramedic colleagues for an extended period of time.
Showing a system strained, looking for answers.
To also give you some understanding of the absentee rate that they're dealing with right now, the emergency services in Toronto was updated today, was at an absentee rate of about 12.8%. And when speaking with Dr. O'Connor, she said that UHN right now has 1,200 people across their network who are currently absent. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. I'll send it back inside.
Thank you, Sean. And again, this comes as the number of people in Ontario hospitals with COVID-19 continues to rise. According to the latest provincial data, there are 2,467 people with COVID in hospital. 438 of those patients are in intensive care units. That is 26 more than yesterday. Meanwhile, 9,706 more PCR tests have come back positive, but this is an underestimate of the true number of cases due to the stricter eligibility criteria and a lack of testing resources. More than 95,500 tests remain under investigation.
Comparing some of those figures to 1 week ago, as mentioned, there are 2,467 patients with COVID-19 in Ontario hospitals. On January 3rd, that number was 1,232. 438 of them are in intensive care. And that's up from 235 1 week ago.
Nearly 7,000 cases are considered resolved today, raising that total to more than 888,000 over the course of the pandemic. 12 additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 10,378 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
As it stands, in just 1 week's time, Ontario students are set to return to in-person learning.
Parents waiting to hear if that January 17th deadline will be extended, and school officials are working to do what they can to make classrooms safe. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello joins us now live. Colin, COVID-19 and the safety of schools, still a big source of debate tonight.
Yeah, and it's still a big question as to where the province is really going to go. The Minister of Education says the priority is to get students back into the classroom. But as hospitalizations continue to increase, some in healthcare are divided on whether or not that's a good idea. As students in other provinces head back to their classrooms, Ontario parents are feeling uncertain. Schools in this province are tentatively scheduled to reopen for in-person learning on January 17th.
We are hopeful that we will be able to return shortly, but in the end, we take our lead from the Ministry of Education and public health officials.
The Ford government has given no guarantees about in-person learning resuming next week, nor has it indicated that it's deviating from the current plan. But as the Omicron variant continues to drive up hospitalizations, some healthcare advocates believe reopening schools next week could make the situation worse.
It's not about the kids. It's about the system and what the system can cope. We need to slow it down or people, including kids, will actually not have access to ICUs.
But some who work in intensive care insist children can and should return.
If we could keep daycares open, if we could keep Amazon factories open, we just need to prioritize our schools.
The province has been working to improve safety for students and staff, distributing additional portable air filtration systems for classrooms and N95 masks for educators.
Approximately 600,000 non-fit tested N95 masks for staff. We already have HEPA filters in all occupied classrooms at the TDSB. However, we anticipate receiving nearly 300 additional units.
But critics say the government needs to focus on students as well by providing better quality masks for kids to ensure a safe return.
If the schools end up not going back and kids are online for a further amount of time, that sits at the feet of Doug Ford and his unwillingness all along for 2 years now to appropriately invest in the safety of our schools.
School boards are warning, however, regardless of when students are back in class, parents should prepare for a disruptive winter ahead. And just like in the healthcare sector, there is a lot of concern about the rate of absences due to COVID-19 when the education sector does come back online for in-person learning. The Ford government announced today it is going to allow retired teachers to come back online for a longer period of time, 95 days instead of the previous 50, to help fill some of the gaps created by the Omicron variant. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Nathan, over to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. Meantime, parents who are also essential workers are getting some help to keep them on the job during the pandemic. Emergency child care centers have opened in the city of Toronto. CTV's Austin Delaney is live at one of those locations, the Chester Lee Early Learning Center near Victoria Park in Finch. Austin.
Well, this is a service for those essential workers who have to go to work. Now, they've got kids. Their kids are at home. They can't stay them because they have to go to work.
They are the children of our essential workers, the police officers, nurses, and paramedics, just to name a few. Like personal support worker Esmeret Alem, also a mother who cannot work from home and today took her kids to daycare so she can go help others.
Oh, it's very important because if there is no child care, emergency child care, we can't go work. You're going to stay in home, you know, nobody watching your child. Because they are doing online school, it's so hard for us, but the child care, it saves us because we can't go work.
There are more than 40 approved emergency child care providers across the city and four city and Toronto home child care agencies that have been approved by the province that opened to essential workers today. They are Shoreham Early Learning and Child Care Center, Taylor Creek Early Learning and Child Care Center, Chester Lee Early Learning and Child Care Center, O'Connor Satellite Early Learning and Child Care Center. The kids say they like daycare more than at home.
Because I don't like staying home. I like to do crafts and art.
Afreen Wahid, a mother of two, qualifies, providing emergency dental care.
This is an emergency because especially with schools being closed, the impact it has on children has been, I would say, somewhat negative, and they need a social initiative where you know, we have providers that are helping them and cope with this pandemic.
School children of non-essential workers do not qualify for this program.
It's great that they're offering it, but it's also difficult for some parents. We still have to go to work, but it's a great idea.
Eligible essential workers include healthcare, childcare, truck drivers and transit, grocery store, and pharmacy workers.
And if you think you're eligible for this service, go on the City of Toronto's website. There's a list there. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney. Zoraida?
Thank you, Austin. In York Region, more people were eligible for booster shots starting today. A third COVID-19 shot is now available to anyone 18 and older. Until now, York had prioritized those aged 50 and up for the booster shots. About 30,000 additional appointments were made available this morning at all clinics across the region.
And looking at the latest vaccination numbers across the province, 87.7% of everyone 5 and over has received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And 81.9% are deemed fully vaccinated, and that's still considered two doses in Ontario.
Still to come, a warning for Americans planning on traveling to Canada. The CDC issuing advice today amid a high number of COVID cases here. More on their decision a little later in the newscast. Well, there's certainly a bite in the air tonight. Chilly conditions have moved in.
And that's prompted the city to issue an extreme cold weather alert. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. It's a chilly one.
It certainly is, Nathan and Zoraida. We are looking at really the coldest air mass that we've been dealing with all season, and that's going to continue through the overnight. The extreme cold weather alert issued by the City of Toronto, and plus affecting part of the GTA, an extreme cold warning where temperatures will be in the minus 21 to minus 32 range and wind chills much colder than that. We're also dealing with snow squalls, some of them extending into the northern sections of the GTA. We'll take a look at that coming up, impacting travel on the roads and visibility. Temperatures very cold right now. We only got to minus 7 today in the City of Toronto. Strong winds right now are continuing to drive wind chill. We are looking at winds gusting up to 59 kilometers an hour in the Toronto area. It's minus 10, feeling like minus 19, going down to a low of minus 18, feeling like minus 25. Zoraida?
Thank you, Michelle. The DTC has terminated 354 employees for not complying with the transit agency's vaccine mandate. In a statement, the TTC says this represents approximately 2% of TTC employees, and they've all been out of the workplace since November 21st. We had already temporarily adjusted service to manage these now vacant positions, and we are actively recruiting, hiring, and training new operators.
And staffing shortages in the public transit sector is leaving commuters with fewer options.
I try hard. I mean, I go on the website, I check it out, see if it's canceled or not, and take it from there. Like, what else can you do, right?
I honestly use Google Maps all the time, and it'll just tell me what the best schedule is to jump on, when the next or the one before that was.
Metrolinx says service is being decreased by about 15% across this network of trains and buses. That's because staffing levels are 20 to 30% lower right now. The operator of GO Transit expects absenteeism to increase as more people are exposed to the variant. The Crown Corporation says it's now working to protect critical services.
Free rapid test kits remain difficult to obtain. Markville Mall in Markham was the only pickup location in the GTA today. The line was long this morning, about an hour before the kits were handed out at 9 o'clock, and they were all gone within an hour. The provincially provided kits were also available for pickup at several universities. They included the University of Guelph, Queen's University in Kingston, and Wilfrid Laurier University's Brantford campus.
The Ontario government has advised hospitals to pause non-urgent surgeries to try to relieve some of the strain on the healthcare system. But what's considered non-urgent? Tonight, concerns are being raised about the pandemic's impact on cancer patients. CTV's John Musselman reports.
As hospitals across the province struggle to deal with the Omicron wave, thousands of cancer patients are worried about postponed surgeries and treatment that may come too late. Dr. Stuart Edmonds is the executive vice president with the Canadian Cancer Society.
We've heard through our support programs that the patients and their caregivers feel forgotten at this time, and they're really looking for assurances that their care will be prioritized.
These numbers highlight the issue. Between March and December of 2020, there was a 12% reduction in cancer surgeries compared to the same time frame in 2019. And in July 2020 to August 2021, almost half of all people with cancer reported having their cancer care appointments postponed or disrupted. COVID has overwhelmed the healthcare system. Still, Dr. Edmonds says the other worrying issue is what he calls the tsunami of yet to be diagnosed cancer cases in the months, weeks, and years ahead.
Not only more cancer cases, but more significant cancer cases that are even more difficult to treat. So really, we urge all governments to think very carefully before suspending screening and surgery programs for cancer. But we're still losing many family members to cancer every year, and there are still a number of people being diagnosed with cancer each year. So it doesn't cease to be a health issue, even in the pandemic.
The Canadian Cancer Society says governments and health organizations must integrate perspectives of the public, people with cancer, and their caregivers in their COVID-19 response. John Musselman, CTV News.
In-person learning isn't scheduled to resume in Ontario until next Monday.
But thousands of other Canadian students returned to class today, despite a weekend of high record hospitalizations in some provinces. CTV's Jill McEachon reports.
After an extended break, students across much of Western Canada are back in school. In-class learning resumed today, a mix of excitement and concern as COVID infection rates continue to rise.
I'm excited, a little nervous.
I don't think we're going to have to go online, to be honest, but I don't plan to, but if I do, it'll be a nuisance because I'm not really good online.
But online is where most students are now learning. Manitoba is mirroring other provinces in central and eastern Canada, moving to remote learning for the rest of this week. And Manitoba pediatricians are adamant it not be extended. Citing mental, physical, and developmental health, doctors say kids need to safely return to class as quickly as possible.
But this should not turn into weeks or months of remote learning for children this time.
With COVID infections no longer being tracked by PCR tests alone in most provinces, it's hospitalizations that are painting the picture. And in Quebec today, another record. More than 2,500 people are now in hospital with COVID-19.
In Manitoba, there was a 51% increase in new COVID-19 hospitalizations last week. As critics call for governments to improve surge capacity in hospitals, the Prime Minister will meet with premiers and territorial leaders later today to discuss Omicron's march and the mounting health crisis. Jill McEachon, CTV News, Winnipeg.
America's National Public Health Agency is advising against travel to Canada. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention elevated its travel recommendation to, quote, very high for our country today. The CDC says that's due to a rising number of COVID-19 cases. The agency currently lists about 80 places worldwide at the same level. Canada is one of the top foreign destinations for Americans.
And here at home, the Toronto Police Service has confirmed it's investigating allegations that some officers were given the inside track.
It relates to a promotional process late last year. A Toronto police spokesperson tells CTV News if misconduct is substantiated and the matter were to proceed to tribunal, it would be made public in that process. Should criminal charges arise, those would also be made public by the Toronto Police Service. A police source says a complaint was made accusing a senior officer of supplying exam answers to as many as a dozen officers, and it may have led them to getting promoted unfairly.
Tomorrow's hearing for the Toronto van attack killer has been postponed 3 months. Ontario Superior Court is waiting for the Supreme Court to hear an appeal of another case before sentencing Alec Manassian. Quebec mosque killer Alexander Bissonnette is appealing rules on multiple murders that allow sentences to be served consecutively. The Ontario Superior Court was scheduled to receive an update on that tomorrow, but Bissonnette's appeal hearing has been pushed back. So Manassian's hearing has now been postponed until April 5th.
Toronto police are hoping the public can help them track down a stabbing suspect. They have released security camera images of a man wanted in an attack on a TTC bus. A 32-year-old woman was stabbed by someone sitting behind her on Saturday morning. He then fled following the unprovoked attack. It happened at around 9:30 near Queen Street West and Tecumseh Street. The woman was released from hospital after receiving treatment. Police are asking anyone with information to contact them, but say the suspect is dangerous and should not be approached.
In New York, investigators are looking into why safety doors failed to close when a deadly fire erupted in an apartment building.
It's so devastating. I've been in the building over 30 years, and I've never seen a fire like that. I've never experienced such devastation.
17 people were killed in yesterday's blaze, including 8 children. A malfunctioning electric space heater is believed to have started the fire in the 19-story building in the Bronx. The front door and a door on the 15th floor should have been self-closing, blunting the spread of smoke, but the door stayed open. The stairs were the only method of escape in a tower too tall for fire escapes.
In Los Angeles, a man whose plane crashed onto some railroad tracks was saved in the nick of time from an oncoming train.
Go, 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 go!
Police officers extricated the injured pilot and pulled him to safety seconds before a commuter train barreled through. He was the only person on board a Cessna 172 that crashed onto a railroad crossing shortly after takeoff yesterday afternoon. It happened just blocks from a police station, and officers were on the scene almost immediately.
At the Vatican, the Pope has used some of his strongest words yet concerning vaccination. In a speech to ambassadors, the pontiff suggested today that getting vaccinated against the COVID-19 is a moral obligation. He also denounced how people have been swayed by baseless information to refuse one of the most effective measures to save lives during the pandemic. Pope Francis repeated his call for universal access to vaccines.
The UK is gearing up to celebrate the Queen's Platinum Jubilee this year. Organizers say there will be a huge parade down the mall. It'll be followed by a finale on a stage outside of Buckingham Palace. The events will top off celebrations honoring Her Majesty's 7-decade reign. The 95-year-old Queen will be the first British monarch to celebrate a Platinum Jubilee.
One of the biggest tennis tournaments in the world is being overshadowed by a legal saga surrounding one of the biggest tennis players in the world.
An Australian court judge ruling in favor of Novak Djokovic to remain in the country despite not being vaccinated. But he's still not guaranteed to play in the upcoming Australian Open, which he has won 9 times. CTV's Raheem Ladani is following the latest developments and joins us now with more in studio. Raheem.
Well, Zoraida and Nathan, the decision to allow an unvaccinated traveler to remain in the country, which has dealt with some of the strictest COVID-19 restrictions, has caused severe divide among Australians, with the ball now in the political court.
Jubilation in the streets of Melbourne as fans of Novak Djokovic celebrate his legal victory. But not all Aussies are impressed. The tennis star is being allowed to stay in the country without being vaccinated.
He should abide by the rules, and I think this demonstration is ludicrous.
It's not like someone should get special treatment just because of the status that they hold.
Transcripts detail Djokovic telling a border official he isn't vaccinated for COVID-19 and that he tested positive for the virus twice, which was the basis for him applying for a medical exemption.
Novak has been called many names in many different press and countries around the world, but Novak is only fighting for the liberty of choice.
While a judge sided with the 34-year-old, reinstating his visa and releasing him from a quarantine center where he spent the last 4 nights, the threat of deportation remains.
There's not just a loophole, there's an ocean of discretion.
Australia's immigration minister is considering overruling the judge's decision in the interest of national health and safety.
How will the minister decide? Dilute my COVID message to Australian voters by letting this fellow in who is making a global platform based on not being vaccinated? Who's that going to encourage?
Tennis Canada says it's closely watching how this situation unfolds, with tournaments scheduled for Toronto and Montreal this summer.
But in the end, it is up to the local health authorities that will really dictate what the rules are in place, and they will approve or not approve what your protocol is for running your tennis tournament.
Meantime, the defending Australian Open champion shared this photo of him back on the court practicing, tweeting he plans to stay and compete in the upcoming tournament, though that may be out of his control.
Now, if the immigration minister decides to exercise his power, Djokovic could be barred from the country for 3 years. Meanwhile, the ATP Tour put out a statement saying it strongly recommends all players are vaccinated and that it respects the sacrifices the people of Australia have made. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Remembering Bob Saget, friends, colleagues and fans express grief and love following the sudden death of the comedian and sitcom star.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, the tragic fire in New York City is raising awareness about the potential danger of space heaters. Older models may not have the latest safety features, or if they're used improperly, they can be a safety hazard. I'll have some advice. That story is just ahead.
Minus 10 at Pearson Airport right now, feeling like minus 20 overnight tonight, minus 18, feeling like minus 25. Get ready for it to feel very cold when you head out in the morning. We will have some sunshine, but it's still going to feel close to minus 20 by 9 a.m. We're in a pool of Arctic air, a little bit of a reprieve midweek while we warm up Wednesday, but things are going to get cold again for the weekend. I'll have your 7-day forecast coming up.
We reported earlier on that devastating deadly fire in the Bronx. Fire officials there say the blaze that took the lives of at least 17 people was caused by a malfunctioning space heater.
It's a reminder that if the small portable heaters are older or if they're not used properly, they can be extremely dangerous. Here's Pat Foran with Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan Anzarita, when the temperature drops, space heaters can be a great way to warm up a chilly room or yourself. And newer models come with added safety features, but they are responsible for many home fires and should never be used unattended.
Space heaters are great at warming up those chilly or drafty spots around the house, but used incorrectly, they can be very dangerous. In this demonstration, look how fast a space heater placed close to a couch can cause a roaring inferno. Officials say that space heaters are involved in 33% of all home heating fires.
The safest space heaters turn off automatically if they become too hot or if they're knocked over.
Older space heaters won't have the latest safety features like an automatic shutoff function if they get too hot, which could lead to fires like this. New space heaters have an alarm if they get tipped over and shut off automatically. When choosing a space heater, it also depends on what job you want it to do.
You need to consider whether you're just trying to warm yourself up or whether you're trying to heat an entire room. Our tests show that not all models can do both.
When it comes to space heater safety, keep space heaters 1 meter away from anything that can burn. Never use an extension cord. Always plug the heater directly into a wall outlet. And never leave space heaters operating unattended. Now is also a good time to make sure your smoke detectors are working properly. You should also have fire extinguishers in your home. The best option is the kind that's multi-purpose to extinguish different types of fires.
Generally, in a home, you want to have the most common type of fire extinguisher, which will be an ABC fire extinguisher, because that will extinguish the three types of common fires.
That's trash, wood and paper, liquids, and electrical fires. Make sure your fire extinguisher is fully charged and take a moment to read the instructions so you'll know how to use it if you have to. Following these steps can help you and your family stay safe this winter.
And while space heaters can help warm up a cold room, even the best ones can only do so much. If you're using one in a bedroom as well as keeping it away from drapes and bedding, it should always be shut off before you go to sleep. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
You know, looking at people behind me skating, one dude, no gloves on.
Some hardy souls down there skating at Nathan Phillips Square. It is January after all, Michelle.
It is, but they're all tougher than I am. I promise you that, absolutely, because we are, of course, under an extreme cold weather alert here in the city of Toronto. There are broader extreme cold warnings for parts of the GTA, and we have snow squalls to talk about. So a lot of January happening out there. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So we're going to talk about all of the above. I can't emphasize enough, though, how cold it is outside, how cold it will be through the overnight and early in the morning. And, of course, that travel is very difficult on many roads north of the city because of snow squalls. That's been throughout the day, and it continues to be so. If you don't have to be on the roads, it's a good idea not to be. We're at minus 10 right now, sitting at minus 9, feeling like minus 19, I should say, in the city of Toronto. We got as warm as minus 7 today, so well below seasonal, and that trend will continue. into tomorrow. So here's a look at the watches and warnings that we have in place. Snow squalls to the west of the city, also to the north through the Barrie, Midland, Orillia area, reaching down into northern Durham and York region. So about up to 10 centimeters of snow, even in areas not in the warnings. And then extreme cold, really, from northern Durham, York, right on into eastern Ontario and in through the Muskoka region into northeastern Ontario and also into Quebec, where wind chill values will get in some cases to the minus 35 mark through the overnight period. So it's going to be very cold. This is dangerous frostbite territory, something to keep in mind. And even here in the city of Toronto, where we are not in this warning, wind chill values will get to the minus 25 mark in the overnight. They'll ease up a little bit early in the morning, but our overnight low, minus 18. So the coldest air that we've been dealing with through the season so far. And hopefully, well, I do see it coming back in the seven-day forecast. I was going to say, hopefully that's the last of it, but it's not quite. So what we're looking at in terms of squalls here from Lake Huron and Georgian Bay, winds out of the west really driving these squalls, and they're causing heavy amounts of snowfall, whiteout conditions on the road. Visibility can change in an instant, and roads will be very slick. So there's a lot of accidents that I've seen north of the city, reports of that. So you want to make sure that you take it slow or stay off the roads through the overnight period. We have this surface trough in place that's helping to drive some of this activity. It's going to be displaced by a little bit of high pressure as we get into tomorrow, and then the next system in behind it will help to warm us up. So that's the good news. Looking at our forecast radar, winds shift from being out of the west to out of the north. So that's going to change the direction of the squalls slightly. So as we get into the next few hours, more snow for the Toronto area from Georgian Bay. And then we get some sunshine and a mix of sun and cloud at times tomorrow. A little bit of flurry activity off of Lake Ontario with southerly winds. And getting into Wednesday, we warm up. Winds will be out of the south. So tomorrow, not much warmer. A late, late day high of minus 7 and then up to 1 degree for Wednesday. For Thursday, 0 degrees, and then temperatures drop again for the end of the week, looking quite cold for Saturday. Back to you, Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Caught on camera, city-owned vehicles speeding on Toronto streets. But when it comes to paying the fines, who is on the hook? That story after the break. The CTV News investigation has uncovered road enforcement data that shows hundreds of city vehicles were nabbed speeding.
It includes garbage trucks and other large specialized equipment. City councillors are set to address the issue tomorrow. CTV's John Woodward joins us now live at a speed camera in East York with all the details. John.
These cameras are meant to deter speeding, but it turns out they're catching a lot of city vehicles as well. And our investigation is raising questions about whether those drivers are facing the same consequences as anyone else. This garbage truck was caught speeding outside a North York school. This dump truck going too fast on Scarborough Golf Club Road. This one, a bylaw enforcement vehicle tagged on Shepherd Avenue. All city vehicles issued tickets by Toronto's automated speed enforcement system or its red light cameras. 326 of them issued in the course of a year to vehicles of all shapes and sizes, released to CTV News after a Freedom of Information request.
I find it shocking and really unacceptable that when you see a city truck or a corporate operator, you would assume that driver is being held to a higher standard.
Large city vehicles can be deadly. A garbage truck making a left turn in 2013 struck three children, killing a five-year-old girl. But some of the fines meant to deter horrible outcomes won't ever be paid by some city employees. That's because the city pays the fines first and then must collect from the employees. Of the $32,000 in fines incurred in a one-year period, the city projects it won't be able to recover about $2,500. 70% of fines are projected not to be recovered from the Solid Waste Management Division. The city has said that agency is doing a review of its employee fine management process, and it tells us now we are nearing completion on the implementation of a centralization process that will simplify fine recoveries. Another issue. Well, the TTC and the provincial government told us how fast each vehicle was going. The city has refused to do that on security grounds, only sharing general data that 192 drivers faced charges between 1 and 19 kilometers an hour over the speed limit, and 9 were between 20 and 29 kilometers an hour over the limit. The highest, nearly twice the speed limit, 54 kilometers an hour in a posted 30 zone.
Here we have an arrangement where our own city employees have heavy foots.
Denzel Minan Wong is one of two elected officials planning to get more answers via a motion at a committee meeting Tuesday.
If we can't get our own employees to follow the laws, how can we expect the public to do the same thing?
The city's infrastructure committee is also looking at a proposal to increase the number of cameras in the city from 50 to 75. All of this is in a bid to increase the proven effect on drivers, making them slow down. But apparently that includes drivers employed by the city. Now, the councillors do have concerns about how much information the city has supplied. But at the end of the day, the city did release the records. That's more than can be said of the Toronto Police. We asked them the same questions 6 months ago and still nothing. Reporting live, I'm John Woodward. Back to you.
Thank you, John. Bob Saget is being remembered as kind, caring, and a champion of stand-up comics.
Saget died suddenly in his hotel room on Sunday. CTV's Andrea Case joins us now with the tributes from his colleagues and friends.
Nathan and Zarada, good evening. Yes, Saget was a friend and mentor to those in the comedy community. Of his death, Drew Carey says, "This one hurts." Jim Carrey tweeted, "He had a big, big heart. He gave the world a lot of joy." And comedy legend Norman Lear tweeted, "He was as lovely a human being as he was funny."
Okay, Bob Saget was known to many as America's dad. The 65-year-old is remembered for his role as Danny Tanner on Full House and the host of America's Funniest Home Videos. Saget was found dead in his hotel room in Orlando yesterday afternoon. He had just performed in Jacksonville the night before, posting on social media how happy he was to be back on stage. Saget's former Full House co-stars expressed their shock on social media. John Stamos writes, "I am broken, I am gutted, I am in complete and utter shock. I will never, ever have another friend like him. I love you so much, Bobby." Dave Coulier, who played Saget's best friend, posted, "My heart is broken." Entertainment critic Richard Krause says people's reactions to Saget's death shows how beloved he was.
You look at the comments underneath it, and everyone was, "Oh no, it's too soon. I hope this isn't true." And I think that really shows the level of affection that people had for him, not only as Danny Tanner on Full House or as the host of America's Funniest Home Videos, but also as a stand-up comedian, which was remarkably different from the work that he did in front of the camera. His stand-up routines tended to be quite blue. He was a raunchy comic, but always had kind of a sweet edge to him.
Hi, Daddy.
His Full House daughters, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, paid tribute to their TV dad in a statement. "Bob was the most loving, compassionate, and generous man. We are deeply saddened that he is no longer with us, but know that he will continue to be by our side to guide us as gracefully as he always has." Fellow co-star Candace Cameron Bure tweeted, "I don't know what to say. I have no words. Bob was one of the best human beings I've ever known in my life. I loved him so much." Saget is survived by his wife, Kelly Rizzo, and their three children.
An autopsy was performed this morning, and according to the chief medical examiner, there is no evidence of drug use or foul play in his death. A full report on the cause and manner of death could take up to 3 months to complete. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case-Sarita. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Andrea. The Golden Globes were handed out in Beverly Hills last night, but there was none of the usual excitement and pageantry that would normally surround one of the biggest entertainment events of the year. Some of the big winners were West Side Story, which got the nod for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. The Power of the Dog walked away with the award for Best Motion Picture and Best Director. The embattled Hollywood Foreign Press Association held the award show without a telecast or nominees or even a live stream.
Some of the other winners include Jason Sudeikis for Best Actor in a Television Musical or Comedy, Ted Lasso. Succession's warring brother and sister, played by Jeremy Strong and Sarah Snook. The brother-sister duo Billie Eilish and Phineas O'Connor won Best Song in a Motion Picture for No Time to Die. And Will Smith for his role in the film King Richard. The organization has been under fire for ethical lapses and a lack of diversity, prompting its television partner not to broadcast the ceremony.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
I find it shocking and really unacceptable that when you see a city truck or a corporate operator, you would assume that driver is being held to a higher standard.
Updating our top stories, 326 tickets were issued to city vehicles over the past year, leading to roughly $32,000 in fines. However, the city itself remains unable to collect about $2,500, prompting a review of its employee fine management process.
It's a symptom of a chronically understaffed and underfunded service. We had a lot of trouble handling calls before COVID.
Paramedics say COVID-19 is pushing them to a breaking point with fewer ambulances available to respond to potentially life-threatening emergencies.
This should not turn into weeks or months of remote learning.
Students in Western Canada return to the classroom today, while students in Ontario will be waiting at least another week. The province says it's been working to create a safer environment for staff and students as it faces pressure from doctors and parents groups to get kids back in class.
And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 21 basis points to 78.90 U.S. American benchmark oil slid 67 cents a barrel to close at 78.23. And the TSX Composite Index lost a modest 12 points to close at 21,072.
An extreme cold weather alert is in effect for Toronto.
The conditions certainly being felt by the homeless, and the pandemic only adding an extra challenge at city shelters. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
When the temperature drops this low, it can be dangerous, especially for those who are vulnerable, complicated further by the rapid spread of COVID-19 in shelters.
It's a choice that people have to make between going into a congregate setting where Omicron might be present, or staying outside where you could potentially freeze to death.
Diana Chan McNally is one of many outreach workers who have been trying to connect people with a warm place to stay. She says some are waiting hours, others are not having any luck.
People report to us that when they try to call central intake, which is the line that you call when you're trying to access an indoor bed, that not only are they not able to connect to anyone, that there are no beds, they're actually getting an automated message that tells them to call back later.
According to the city, 44 shelters are dealing with outbreaks. There are 282 total cases. Meantime, COVID-19 isolation and recovery programs are at 81% occupancy.
We're hoping to increase some capacity in that program. But at this stage, just given the transmissibility of the Omicron virus, we're also asking that shelters support people to isolate in situ or in the spaces that they're in, where they're connected to maybe other health or social supports.
I'm scared. Are we going to compromise?
Jennifer Jewell is staying in a shelter hotel and is asking for more transparency.
What's the problem? I don't know how many cases there are here right now, because they're not acknowledging that there is an outbreak.
City officials say shelters are operating at nearly 98%. Advocates say the city must do more.
If the staffing is an issue, actually bringing in the military to support the provision of recovery beds would be really important. If they have to do that, they should. And again, the masks need to be deployed equitably to everyone, and everyone must have access to N95s.
Increasing some shelter space for people in need, incrementally increasing some of the space at the isolation and recovery site. We have made N95 masks available.
The city says making shelters safe and keeping them open remains its top priority.
City officials say they're adding 20 additional beds to shelters tonight and are working on contingency plans to further expand capacity at shelters and warming centers for later in the week. Mike Walker, CTV News.
City officials say they're doing everything they can to maintain emergency services.
It comes amid serious staffing shortages. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Chanel Call. Reshmi, you'll be talking to the paramedic union chair.
Yes, Nathan, he will respond to what we heard from city officials today. The mayor and Chief Pegg saying that they're doing everything they can, but offloading patients for paramedics is tying them up. So we're going to get into that. And we're also going to talk about CPR. We could all brush up on our skills there in these unprecedented times. That's coming up on CP24 tonight.
Okay, and Chanel, you'll be looking at what Western provinces are doing differently to get kids back in the classroom.
That's right. So BC, Saskatchewan, Alberta, students in all of those provinces are learning back in classrooms today and for the next couple of weeks. A very different story here in Ontario. We know our students are learning from home these days. So coming up on CP24 tonight, we'll speak with our medical experts to find out what's different in the other part of the country and why we're seeing different jurisdictions have different restrictions in the education sector.
Chanel and Reshmi, thank you. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
Tonight, a harrowing crash and heroic rescue all caught on camera.
My first initial thought was, we got to get him out.
A pilot pulled from a downed plane seconds before a train comes crashing through. That's later on CTV National News. Join us.
Coming up on CP24 tonight. Code Red on the front line. Why Toronto paramedics are sounding the alarm. And homeschool struggle. As students out west head back to class, why are Ontario schools still shut down? Medical experts join live. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
In Britain, the fossilized remains of a giant prehistoric sea creature have been unearthed. It is aptly nicknamed Sea Dragon. The giant ichthyosaur was found last year at the Rutland Water Nature Reserve. It is 10 meters long with a skull that weighs nearly a ton. This is one of the largest and most complete fossils of its kind ever discovered in the UK.
All right, to the forecast, Michelle, what can we expect tonight?
Well, what we're looking at is very cold overnight lows. Nathan and Zoraida, we're looking at a low of minus 18 overnight, feeling like minus 25. And we are also in this deep, deep air mass of Arctic air. Things are going to change as we get into the next little while. There are gradual improvements as we get into tomorrow. But as you wake up in the morning, things are going to feel still into the minus 20s. In terms of the 7 days, we will be dipping into colder air yet again in the next little while. So right now, sitting at minus 10, feeling like minus 20 in the city of Toronto. Tomorrow's high, just minus 7. So that's going to be quite late in the day. So something to look forward to will be a warm-up as we get into Wednesday, where temperatures are going to get closer to the zero mark and the air mass will be a little bit more comfortable. Back to you, Zoraida.
Okay, thanks, Michelle. And be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
And in the meantime, you can stay up to date by going to our website and watch breaking news all day long on CP24.
So Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night. We'll see you at 11:30.
Good night.